Property in the USA. It's a podcast of the book of the same name, Buying Property in the USA, A Foreigner's Guide. I know I'm here with my co-author, Ken Sugiura. Hi, Ken, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you, Sam?
Very good, very good. Now, we're talking today about a process we've both been heavily involved in, which is buying property in the USA. But for a lot of our listeners, they'll be thinking, that sounds risky, you know. Why would I invest in a property market thousands of kilometres away when I can invest in my own country? So what's the appeal for us in the USA? How would you sum it up?
Well, in one word, it is cheap. Basically, it's opportunity which I don't think has existed in the history of U.S. property market for quite a while. Let's face it, a lot of people invest their savings through, you know, buying the funds or shares or bonds and whatever, and then these days everybody does international investment.
Yeah.
For shares.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may be owning shares in Europe or America or Asia, Australia, but when it gets to the property investing, you know, unless you are institutional investors who have billions of dollars of pension assets which invest around the world, most people feel comfortable just buying your own home in your little town where you work, where your family lives, and that's probably the only property asset you ever own in your life.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to be restricted by that if there's a great opportunity to make money. And I think the US is one such example.
Now, I think I obviously agree with you that it is a big opportunity. I mean, we're looking at properties, I suppose, that are perhaps a quarter to a half of their former value prior to the economic collapse.
That's right.
And so you're getting an opportunity to purchase these assets at a heavily, heavily, heavily discounted price. But what sort of return are we getting typically on these assets?
Oh, you know, net yield, we're talking about sometimes 20%, 15%, 25%, depending on the markets and type of property and so on. But look, I wouldn't bother investing in the U.S. away from my home unless the returns, expected returns, are substantially higher than what I can get back home.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, again, it's such an opportunity that I think everybody should consider, because the expected returns will certainly justify all the risks and the trouble you go to. And that's why I think that 20%, that's just, we're talking about net income return. We haven't even talked about potential capital gains or potential currency gains, which might come with it.
Which are all factors, of course.
So I think it's, you know, I certainly started to spend a lot of time investigating, researching the U.S. market, because I can see the potential returns from both income and capital gains are substantially higher than what I may be able to get in other markets.
Of course, of course. And we'll talk a little bit more about the history of the economic collapse, but to give people an idea of the kind of properties we're buying, I mean, we're typically, would you say, buying between, say, 30,000 and 60,000 on average?
That's right. Yeah.
Just to give people an idea that you don't need to be a millionaire to get into this.
Yeah.
And what are we renting for, typically?
These properties, you know, you get to rent, you know, in the U.S. you get rental quoted on a monthly basis. We're talking about $800 or $900, sometimes $1,000, you know, for a working class family who wants three or four bedroom house in a nice area. They lost houses because of the GFC situation, but they still, look, people still have to live in somewhere, and then they're paying rent, and that's a good return, because you're getting, say, $800, and then you're making an investment of $30,000 if you can quickly do a calculation. And then a lot of markets, people talk about gross yield of, say, 3% or 4%.
Yeah.
And then we're talking about net return, income return over 15%. You know, even some big property you might get, you know, 10%, 12%, and sometimes 20%. That's so long as you can get the cash flow, that alone is already a good investment.
And we talk about the backdrop to this opportunity a bit more in the book, but it's fair to say in 2007, you know, this 2008 rather, the US had an enormous economic collapse, and we all know about this, we've read about it in the headlines, but what it meant for the housing market was that, as Ken was saying, a large number of Americans lost their homes to the banks, and the banks now in the position of owning a whole stack of property, and they don't really want to be in the real estate business. So this property is being released back onto the market, and that's why you're getting these depressed property values, because the average American can't borrow or doesn't have enough money to basically purchase a home, but yet still needs a place to live. So that's why we're having this fantastic return.
Mm. I think that's what it is. And you know, remember, you probably heard about the non-recourse financing. That's basically, it's actually very, it was unique in America. You can just borrow money from a bank, even if you have a very fragile employment history or income history. You can borrow up to something 100% of the purchase price.
Mm.
And worst case, which could happen to you, is that if you cannot pay the mortgage, you just give the key back to the bank, and the bank, you can walk away without losing your cars and all the other assets. So that's non-recourse. If you're in that gamble, you would be very tempted to buy as many houses as possible, because all you can lose, it's an upside option only, really, call option. You're paying, you know, almost no down payment to get that sort of exposure.
Of course.
And then worst case could happen is you just give the key back. And when that happened, everybody was just going crazy about buying houses, and that what, you know, U.S. property prices have been really pushed up, upwards and up until 2007. And now we're just basically having a complete meltdown system.
Inversion,
So, you know, after the, you know, the bubble, always there's a bust, and then we are getting into the market right
now. Rock bottom,
Yeah, take advantage of it.
Fair to say it's a temporarily dysfunctional market.
Exactly, I think it's also a price discovery phase that a lot of people, you know, wondering where's the fair value? Because in one street, you get no more housing, and no more houses being sold by the seller at, say, $100,000. Right next door, the banks are selling their, owned property at $20,000, you know, and it's right next door.
Yeah.
I mean, what's a fair value? Valuation is all completely screwed up in that sort of a market.
Of course.
So, I mean, as an investor, I would rather buy the $20,000 house in the same street where everybody else buying $100,000, but, you know, paying $100,000 for the other houses, you know?
Mm. Just to recap, both Ken and myself are property investors in the US with multiple properties there, and we're thoroughly convinced that it's a sound investment strategy. But maybe, Ken, you could tell us, I mean, is it simple for people to do, and is it legal for people to do? What are the barriers? Can anyone get involved like us?
In many markets outside, or in many countries around the world, there are a lot of restrictions on foreigners' ownership of properties. In some some countries in Asia, there are, you know, basically there are places where you cannot buy land or freehold properties, titles, as foreigners. But U.S. is such an open country, effectively consists of all those immigrants.
Yeah.
You know, so they were originally foreigners coming in and buying the houses to have a job and to work and so on. So we there's no restriction as such as a foreign buyer.
Yeah.
I think it's more, we'll talk about it in the books later, but I think it's opening a bank account is even more difficult than buying a properties.
Yeah, I mean, just because it's legal and you can do it means it sounds easy, but it doesn't mean that it always is easy. But we think if you follow the advice that we've learned, sometimes through bitter experience in the book, it's a pretty smooth process, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. I think I wish I came across with a book like this before I start investing in the US, because I don't think you come across as many books which are written by the actual practitioners, investors in the market who have gone through all those processes themselves. And a lot of books are written by so-called gurus or experts who are basically telling other people to buy property, but they don't own anything.
They don't have any skin in the game. What kind of people are getting involved in investing in the US? What nationalities and where's the money coming from?
There is available stats in the I think you can find them on the Google if you look for it. There's a breakdown of the nationalities which are investing in American property markets at the moment. A lot of Canadians they love places like because you know they get winter. Their property market have been like Australian
heavily inflated.
Yep, very much thanks to all the resource boom. They have very expensive properties, so they see the value just south of the border, and they're coming into market like Phoenix and buying a lot of good properties. And then on the other hand, emerging economies such as Brazil, China, and those kind of countries, because again their economies started to be booming, their property markets have really have become have boomed, and they see the value in the U.S. Place like Miami has been bought up by the Brazilians and the markets. That makes a huge difference because both Phoenix and I think Miami have really, thanks to those foreigners buying the properties, I think the markets has hit the bottom in my view, and it's already started to go up. And state like Florida, I think it's 28% or almost 30% of the total property purchase last year by the by non-Americans, foreigners.
It makes sense, though, doesn't it? Because the flip side to the lending practices that created the bubble are that now U.S. banks won't lend to U.S. Citizens, even when they're got solid employment. The lending criteria has become so restrictive that usually it's the outside bidder that's getting the property in some cases.
And telling you from my experience, and I've got a Japanese background, that after the bubble, your home, if your home property market has gone through the boom and busts, and then your confidence gets destroyed so much that you look at your own home tariff and your own market, you see you lose the confidence in buying those properties. Every time I visit the U.S. and I get that same feeling talking to American Americans about buying houses, because they think that because they lost so much money in the last 4 or 5 years, they just think it's a joke. As a foreigner coming in and buying those properties, they think, wow, you've got lots of guts in cash. But I mean, because foreigners can see the relative values, that's what it is. You're buying your own backyard, you may be paying $500,000 for a single family home in your country. You go to America in a similar suburb, you're buying the house for $30,000. That's what's happening.
Now, Ken, I'm the kind of person that's more convinced, I have to say, by examples rather than rhetoric. So why don't we talk about perhaps Detroit? I mean, that's a city where both of us have invested some money, one of a number of cities, but it's an unfashionable investment destination, but we think it's a good one. Maybe if you want to tell us about one of your properties in Detroit, what was the purchase price? What are you renting it out for? Is it hard to find a tenant? How's that investment gone?
I started investing in Detroit market in early 2011, and for example, I've paid exactly $30,000 for a 3-bedroom house in a very nice street, and we spent about $5,000 on rehab, which is the renovation, and we got the tenant who's paying $900 every month, and it took about a week to do a full rehab and about 5 5 days to get a tenant signed up. So since then, it's been cash flowing, you know, over a year and a half. Every time I see the property when I visit, I'm very proud of owning such a property because, I mean, if you put that same house in say Sydney, Australia, that would be worth probably about $1 million.
Yeah. The Australian property bubble is probably a story for another day, but that's typical of the kind of properties we're buying in Detroit, isn't it? I mean, we're part of some friends of ours have also joined us in investing there, and what are we up to? 16 properties or something?
Yeah, I think it's over 20 now.
Over 20, wow.
Yeah, and out of 20, everything is fully tenanted. All the houses are fully tenanted. Everyone's getting cash flow every month. Hmm. You know, which is great, and that's exactly what we want to do until we see the value start to go up, because the properties, for example, that property I just talked about was sold for $160,000 in 2007. There's a history, you know.
Yeah.
You can see that, and that's you're buying at $30,000.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know whether it's going to go up to $160,000 again in the next few years, but I mean, you know, if you're getting
how much lower can it go?
Yeah, how far can you go?
And if the asset's cash flowing as you describe, yeah. I mean, surely that puts a floor under the value.
Yeah, I think it's a difference between buying gold and buying a property, because gold doesn't give you a cash flow while you're waiting for the price appreciation. Whereas what we are doing in the U.S. property market is that we don't know when the price started to really start to go up. You know, I'm not going to be able to tell you it's going to be tomorrow or 5 years down the track. But, you know, the fact is that one thing I can tell you is that properties we're buying are actually generating income, which is a cash flow. And if it's 20% every year, in 5 years down the track, effectively you're getting your initial investment back.
Yeah.
And anything after that, if it's a capital gain, that's your bonus.
Of course. Now we talk a lot about in the book, we talk about different markets, the merits and characteristics of different markets and what kind of investors they might appeal to. But I suppose, and we also talk about the process for those who want to get involved in investing in the US market and following the kind of route that we've taken. And I think, I don't know about you, but I think the best thing is to be forearmed with the right information. Would you say that's the biggest necessary thing to have when you're embarking on this process?
Yeah, I think the research, homework, you know, that's critical for any investment endeavors, I think, in life, isn't it? Like, if you're doing a stock market investment or foreign exchange market, you know, if you're unarmed with no knowledge, you'll be exposed to all sorts of risks. Mm. Basically, the research and doing homework and learning about it is great. I mean, it's an important tool for you to be knowledgeable. Mm. Property markets have a lot of issues that you need to be aware of, and again, this book is all about, you know, our experience from as real investors in the market and what we have seen and what have experienced in along the way, and we don't want people to make the similar mistakes. We, you know, I'm not saying I have made perfect
catastrophic mistake, but
I have made a perfect successful investment every step of all the way. You know, you make some mistakes, but all the mistakes you're doing, you have to learn from it, and that's something we are willing to share with other fellow investors, because after all, as we become more and more investor minded in the US market, that would be good, because the property price will go up for all of us, and I think the literacy, financial literacy of the investors goes up. That means you know, the markets become more sophisticated, so we become more efficient. Mm. And I think that's good for all the productive investments, I think.
Fantastic. Now, that's all we've got time for today, but we'll be back in subsequent podcasts to talk about the nuts and bolts of how you actually go about kicking off your investing in the US career, and also some of the risks involved. I mean, we don't think that they're unmanageable, but there's a lot that you do need to be aware of. Now, just to recap, this is Buying Property in the USA, the podcast of our book, Buying Property in the USA, A Foreigner's Guide. If you want to buy our book or check out some of the advice on our website, the website web address is www.buyingpropertyinTheUSA.com. Thanks very much for your time. Thank you very much, Ken. Much appreciated, and we'll be back for the next episode.